Greetings and welcome to Experiencing the Word, a Bible study ministry of Atonement Lutheran Church in Fargo, North Dakota. My name is Paul Cross, and I will be your guide through the Bible as we seek to understand God's plan for our lives and to learn life lessons from the pages of Scripture. In this season of study, we will focus our attention on Genesis, the first book of the Bible, the book of beginnings. If you would like to attend one of our studies, we meet at Atonement Lutheran, located at 4601 South University Drive here in Fargo. We meet on Wednesday nights at 6:30. But for now, join us in this recording of a live session of Experiencing the Word.
Pray. Lord, we're grateful for tonight. We thank you for this time and this place. We ask that you would direct and guide our conversation tonight in your word. Continue to stir our hearts up to love your word even more and to learn from it, that we might be more transformed into your image by the power of your Holy Spirit. For we ask this in Jesus' name, and all God's saints said. Amen. 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 Give them heaven. All right. Here's what we're going to talk about tonight. Number one, we're going to talk about babies, twin babies. Number two, we're going to talk about these twin babies as they grow up. Number three, we're going to talk about another one of those funny little episodes. And number four, we're going to talk about probably the most notorious rotten episode in the entire Bible. And I love it. And I just absolutely love it. It's wonderful. So that is what we're going to be looking at. Does anybody have any questions, thoughts, comments, or just general sort of stuff that you want to get off your chest? How about them twins? No. Nothing? You feeling great? You feeling good?
Want spring?
Yeah. Well, twins are funny, aren't they? My dad was a twin. And my son, Stephen, was probably going to be a twin. That's how we found out we were pregnant, that the other one didn't quite make it. But twins are funny. You know, I have all sorts of expectations on twins, and I would imagine that even as in the sound of my speaking, we might have twins in our midst. So you never know. But again, my dad and his brother were about as different a people as you could possibly be. It was amazing to watch them, nevertheless, they also had some things that were very similar. Twins are one of those. You know, it's kind of a surprise. I mean, let's just be honest. I mean, people generally don't have multiple births. They typically only have a single birth. That's kind of how that happens. And so it does. But did you hear about the woman that had identical triplets? And they were natural, not in vitro, but identical triplets. And she almost died at childbirth. I mean, they already had two kids, but all identical triplets. It's like 1 in 20 million births is something just astronomical to have identical triplets. I remember growing up at the Air Force Base, Randolph Air Force Base, there were identical triplets on the Air Force Base. I remember their last name was Ross. There were three girls, and they were dressed in red, yellow, and blue. And I mean, they had their dad was a general on the base, and so that they had multiple red, yellow, and blue outfits, as I recall. Not just one, but I mean several red, yellow, and blue outfits that all matched and so forth like that. But we have a situation with Sarah and, I mean, Sarah, Rebecca and Isaac. Rebecca, of course, we met last week. We had to go through great difficulties finding Rebecca and getting her to come. She was in a hurry to come. It was her brother Don't forget her brother. What was her brother's name again? Oh, that wasn't his name.
Whitey.
Whitey. Do you remember, as I said, you got this guy who's kind of just you're concerned about him, and he deserves a nickname like Whitey. And I mean, he really does. You know, like Whitey Bugler, you know, the guy that whacked all these people. He deserves a nickname like that. But so you've got him. But she comes back, and then so they decide to get happily married after. So turn in our Bibles. Turn to Genesis chapter 25. We're going to skip verses 1 through 18 because that's actually Abraham's story, and we've already been there. Let's go to chapter 25, verse 19. I'll go ahead and read this. It says, "These are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son." Do you remember where I said that word generation appears? Here's another one of those appearing. You can divide the book of Genesis by that word. He was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to be his wife. My son Mark would not want to hear that. He, as I said, he's 27 and still looking. So in any case, to be his wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean of Padam Aram, the sister of Laban, Whitey. And Isaac prayed to the Lord because of for his wife, because she was barren. Okay, so we have another situation of another woman that is unable to have children, which is, of course, in the ancient Near East, a big problem, a big, big problem. It's certainly an issue today for women who want to have children to not be able to conceive. It's probably a little bit more common than people make it out to be. Nevertheless, here she has this problem. And so we're praying to the Lord. And the Lord... he prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his prayer, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. Okay? That's his prayer. And the children struggled within her. And she said, "If it is thus, why is this happening to me?" Well, you know, it sounds like she's having a difficult pregnancy. Sounds like she's having a tough time. You know, sometimes, you know, it's always difficult to talk about pregnancy. I mean, it is always difficult because it can get emotional really quick. But what's the most difficult thing to talk about with regard to pregnancy? It's having a good one. Because if you're having a good and easy pregnancy, you automatically develop enemies. I mean, it's just true. I mean, as I said, it's true. If you're having a great pregnancy, you really don't want to tell anybody you're having a great pregnancy because you will develop people who just sort of all of a sudden just say, "Why you?" You know. So because, again, it's emotional because pregnancy can be rather difficult and an exceedingly emotional thing. And I think I'd be wise to stop there. But we'll keep going because I'm not wise. In any case, neither does the Bible story stop there, so we need to keep going on. They're struggling within her, and she said, "If it is thus, why is this happening to me?" So, now this is a curious passage right here. This is really odd. So she went to inquire of the Lord. This is why you got to get your little biblical bloodhound out, and you get your little sniffer going, and you got to ask yourself questions. Why on earth is it said that way? Where did she go to inquire of the Lord? You ever think about that? Did she? Was there a shrine for the Lord at that time? Was there a place that she could have gone, like a temple or a special sacred place that she would have gone? This is very, very early on in the story. And didn't she come from... Padan Aram? I mean, were they monotheistic Lord worshippers back there? Where would she go to pray? It's just kind of a curious question to ask. It doesn't say, we don't know, but it does sort of raise the question, what was her faith like? Well, here's what she prays. And the Lord said, well, she prays and says, "Hey, what's going on?" Because she goes to inquire of the Lord. That's a good idea. You know, a lot of people go to demand of the Lord. are we a demanding kind of people, you know, or complain at the Lord, shake our finger at the Lord and wag our finger and say, God, you know, what's up with you? Why are you doing this? But actually what she does is that she goes to actually inquire and to say, I'm willing to listen to what you have to say, which, by the way, is probably not a bad posture for us in prayer. Right? Because for a lot of people in prayer, it's, I need to dump. I need to get all this out on the table. I need to say what I need to say, and what I need to say is more important. I have a feature for you. This might come as a surprise to you. But what God has to say to you is probably more important than what you have to say to God. Not that what you have to say to God is unimportant. Don't get me wrong. But I think what God has to say to you is probably much, much more important. But that's not a typical posture of prayer for us, is it? Normally, we have a list, boom, 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 boom. Here are the things, God, that I'm expecting from you. Sometimes we tend to look at prayer as an incantation. You know, an incantation is used for magic. That's the difference with God. Magic is an attempt to control the supernatural. And a lot of us would like to control God. You ever think about that? A lot of us would like to control God and say, God, here, I want you to do this, and I want you to do this, and I want you to do this, and I want you to do this. Rather than say, God, what would you like me to do? What would you like me to do? How would you like me to respond? Where would you like me to be in life? What would you like me to be doing? And the same is true about, you know, it's one of the, I like that little book that we just got finished reading. What was the name? I'm a church, that's the one, Robert, absolutely. I'm a church member, and I love that section about personal preferences, you know, because there is, you know, this is no different than any other church, and we are no different than any other people. We have our personal preferences, which, unfortunately, sometimes can turn into, well, this is how it's got to be. How do I say this? Because this doesn't have to do with this congregation. But I was talking with somebody the other day, and these were his words. He said, why do Lutherans have to be that way? And I, again, not a member of this congregation, not, you know, not associated with this congregation, so don't be thinking, I wonder who that was. I asked this individual a little bit further and said, well, what do you mean by that? He said, well, Lutherans tend to be very, very picky about the way things are done, and if they're not done in a certain way, they get very, very cranky. This person's not really, you know, all that Lutheran about things, but was noticing this, and all I could say is, yep. But here, counter to the idea of, it needs to be my way. Encounter that little book. The question is, what do you want, God? And so she inquires, what is going on? I think that's a very teachable moment for us. I know I spent a little bit of time on that little section, but probably one of the most important teachable sections that we can see. Help me understand what's going on. That's probably a better way to look at it. Thank you, Rhonda. That's excellent. And then here's what God says. Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you shall be divided. One shall be the stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger, which, of course, is tantamount to heresy. Because we've never done it that way before, at least in the sort of the proto-Lutheran church here. Well, it's not really Lutheran church, but the proto-patriarchs, because in patriarchal society, they practice, and I love this word almost as much as superannuated antediluvians. You'll remember my infatuation with the superannuated antediluvians, you know, the guys that lived before the flood for a very long time. The word, you're going to love this word, primogenitor. Primogenitor. Are there any firstborn here in this group? Show of hands. Hands up high, please. We want to see the firstborn. Okay. Four primogenitors? Oh, gosh. Robert, if I had in my grasp a Homer trophy, it would be on your desk right now. Oh, my goodness. They're pretty good. I have to confess, I may steal that. That's pretty funny. Primogenitors. Oh, my. Oh, gosh. But the idea was primo, the first. And born, the firstborn gets everything. And that was extremely common in the Middle Eastern culture of this time, of this era. Very, very common in the ancient Near East. Extremely common even in, well, why do you think you're here? Why do you think you're here? Now, another show of hands. How many people are of Norwegian ancestry that I'm speaking to? Hands up high. Okay. Any Swedish ancestry people out there? All right.
I clipped my nails. I have no Swede left in me.
Okay, you clipped your nails. You have no Swede left, and you listen to this guy. Let me tell you something. If you raise your hand, you're here because of primogenitor. You did not get it. The person with primogenitor is back in Norway and back in Sweden because there was nothing for us or nothing for our ancestors to have. We were kind of got the scraps. The eldest son, the firstborn son, got everything. We got nothing except if we could scrape together some money for a boat ride to America. That's why you're here. Do you think I'm kidding? Do you think I'm making that up? That is the God's honest truth because of this crazy thing called primogenitor. Well, I guess we got the last laugh on them. Have you been to Norway? Do you know how much a cup of coffee costs over there? You think Starbucks is expensive? Try buying coffee in a cafe. Anybody ever done that? How expensive is it over there? No, remember, you probably are in shock and just sort of traumatized by it.
$6 or $8,
yeah, exactly. That was when? About 3 years ago. Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. I had a friend of mine just came back from there. They said it was $10 for a cup of coffee. Yeah, so, yeah, you won, okay? Now, but in the ancient areas, they practiced, and this was really serious stuff. You're going to see a theme over and over again that questions or challenges. It's a kind of an underlying thing that challenges this notion of primogenitor because it's not the firstborn. Abraham is, his firstborn is who? Ishmael. Who is Jacob's firstborn? It's not Judah. It's Reuben. Over and over again, you're going to see this challenge to this notion of firstborn. Okay, but nevertheless, this is what's going on inside of her, and it's kind of not much fun. So that's what happens. Well, we continue on. Gave birth, and this is great. When the days of her birth were completed, behold, there were twins in her womb, and first came out red. And we got a little footnote there. Also for hairy, it means hairy or reddish hair, because his body had a hairy cloak, so they called his name Esau, which also means that, red. And afterwards, his brother came out holding Esau's heel, and he came out and they called him Jacob. Now, take a look at the footnote in the ESV there. He cheats. Now, I'm not suggesting that if any of you named your children Jacob, or if you happen to be named Jacob, that this is what you intended. But in the Bible, names mean stuff. And this is perhaps one of the most important meaning of names in the entire Bible. He cheats. Mick? What's the name?
Mick.
I'm he cheats. How'd you like to go through life saying, "Hi, I'm he cheats"? I mean, you'd be grabbing your wallet. But that's what it is. I mean, that's it says he cheats. That's what he's named. There is this play on words that he's grabbing his brother's ankle, which means that trying to grab him by the ankle, which in Hebrew sounds very similar to he cheats. And so this is how this child is named. Because they see this going on and they think, ah, this guy's going to be problems. And guess what? They were not wrong. Needless to say, this goes on. And now, the next thing is, when the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter and a man of the field. Yay! I used to refer to him as a 3M, a Minnesota macho male. Yes? Sometimes do they live up to the expectation of their names? Could be. It could very well be. I was the tallest of my brothers, the youngest, but my name is Paul, which means in Greek, small one. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's because my middle name was Mark, and that means warlike. I forgot to belong to the god of Mars, I suppose. Whatever. Quite possibly. That certainly could be. But as we're going to see later on in the story, names really are going to mean a lot, and there's going to be some things that are going to offend us because of our modern sensibilities and would be a very offensive in society. But as you're sitting around the campfire, you are going to be roaring in laughter at some of these things, if you were living back then, because they were meant also not only to tell a story, but also they tell a very funny story about this. And a lot has to do with this notion of Jacob's character, of being someone who's a little on the shifty side. No, who's a lot on the shifty side. Someone who, if you do shake his hand, you better watch out, because you don't know what's going to happen. Because you know you're not dealing with somebody who's playing it straight. But in any case, you've got Esau, who is, as I said, the Minnesota macho male, or North Dakota macho male. I mean, he goes out, you can see him out on his ATV, or his snowmobile, or on his jet ski. I mean, he is out there, I'm out hunting things and killing stuff and all that sort of stuff. You can see him doing that, right? Okay, because that's what he's doing, because it says so right here. And when the boys grew up, one was out there on his ATVs, and hunting with his 30-06 and a man of the field. It says so right there. Doesn't it say that in your Bible? Or something close to it? Something close to it, okay? But you can almost hear the other shoe drop right now. It doesn't say but. It says while Jacob was a quiet man dwelling in tents. Now, here's where it gets really ugly. Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game. But, as Tommy Smothers so eloquently said, Mom always loved you best. Now, where do you think she learned this? See, this is part of the problem. This is kind of why we, you know, I think one of the things that, I'm not trying to step on any toes, but I think one of the probably great revelations for me in my life in dealing with chemical dependency in my own family and in the families of people close to me is this whole notion of being an adult child of an alcoholic. I don't know if you may have heard of that or not, and how that affects a person. And that may be your case, and again, I'm not trying to pull back any problems or challenges that you've experienced in life. I'm just trying to be descriptive about things. Our families of origin affect us. They do. Sometimes when we come clean with that, and when we see that, and when we see that in our lives, there can be a chance for some progress or healing or understanding or whatever it might be. I mean, we can get a better handle on that. You'd remember and recall the kind of family of origin that Rebecca grew up in. It was messed up. Messed up. And so we have a situation here that it's messed up. I mean, just reading it. I mean, look what it says there. I mean, did you see what it says there? It says Isaac loved Esau because he ate game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. I mean, this is not going to be pretty. This is going to be ugly. It's going to be, again, I'm going to say this, why I believe in the Bible and why it is authentic is because it tells stories like this that have the ring of truth in people's lives. The nature of people don't change. And it's hard and it's challenging. And it hits us where we don't want it to hit us. And yet, it's very real. I used to, in our family, we joke about who Mom always loved best. Except the only person that doesn't believe it, of course, is Mom. She of course, does not believe this. But anyway, so.
In regard to Isaac's character, is it out of character that he would love Esau more?
Yes. Stunningly so. Maybe there's something there that, you know, because he was, I mean, we don't get any picture of that because he's out doing just the opposite. He's more like Jacob. Because where do we find him when Rebekah shows up? He's out in the field doing what? Meditating. He's out in the field meditating. You get the sense that this is more who he's like, and maybe Jacob sees that. But he's gravitating more to Esau. And you're right, Bob. It doesn't make sense. But there is some of that. Maybe he's not like that maybe there's part of him that says, you know, I wish I was more like that. I wish I was more like that. And I'm glad I've got it.
Esau's dad have a preference for him over his brother.
That's possible. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. This is messy, isn't it? It's messy. This is the part of the Bible we don't necessarily want to deal with. Maybe it's because it's part of our own lives that hurts. But I think we're going to see that God has a plan for this. That's the neat thing. Is ultimately, God has a plan for all this. But I want us to see early on that these are things that are indicating to us not everything is all peaches and cream. Not everything is all roses. We have a pretty serious problem. And even, I mean, I don't care what culture you're from, when you read those words, you know there's something amiss with this family. And again, this is the family through whom God is going to bless the nations. Which again, also makes me feel a lot better, because then when there's some, you know, schlep like me that doesn't know, you know, beans about anything, then I know there's hope for me. That when there's somebody like me who's just a total goof, God can use that. So, in any case, well, there you go. Let's go on. Okay, so time marches forward. By the way, just to kind of let you know, she is trying to have a baby for 20 years. Again, we tend to collapse time in the Bible and think, oh, and the next day she had a baby. No, 20 years later, she has these babies, and she's probably in her mid-30s by now, by this time. And he is, 60 when this happens. Woo! Wonder what Dr. Lohr would have to say about that. But anyway, you need to listen to what you'd have to say about that. It's pretty predictable. Then, once upon a time, then once Jacob was cooking, so they grow up, and Esau came in from the field. This is a great story. And Esau came in from the field, and he was exhausted. And Esau said to Jacob, "Let me eat some of that red stew, for I am exhausted." Therefore, his name is Edom, because we got the take a look down there. Edom is red as well. And he said, "Well, sure. Have some stew." Is that what he says? It'll cost you. Devil went down to Georgia looking for a soul to steal. Well, you know, there pretty much is this sort of sense. Oh, yeah. Sure, I'd love to. You could have some, but it will cost you. Well, what will it cost me? Read on. What is it going to cost him? Let's take a look at this, what's going to cost him. He says, Jacob said, "Sell me your birthright. Now! Don't even think about it. I want now. No time to make a decision. I want it now." Now you know why he's called Jacob, okay? You're starting to get a better picture of this guy. This guy is a rat. I mean a rat. But I thought he was Israel. I thought the children of Israel came from him. I thought, yeah, you're right, you thought that, but you didn't know who he was like. This guy is a capital R rat. And it doesn't take us long to figure this out, that he's a capital R rat. No, he's a rat. Okay, so he says, Esau's a nitwit. I mean, so, you know, you got two of them there. And you just got to go beat your head and say, what did we do wrong to have two sons like this? Okay, and then he says, Jacob said to him, swear to me now. So he swore. See, but you get that sense of urgency. And Esau says, I'm about to die. What use is a birthright to me? And Jacob said, swear to me now. Second time he uses the word now. Get this done now. And so he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew. You know, this is not me because I wouldn't give you squat for lentils. So I'm just telling you that right now. I'm not doing that. I'd rather go hungry. And drank and rose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Well, you know, this is no small thing because, as we will see later on, he will also not only sort of make the contract, but he'll also make good on the contract, which, of course, is the great story of Genesis, is this rather horrible deception that goes on in this family. Well, how do we like the boys so far? Any observations or comments? Just don't you wish you had some swell kids like this? One is a nitwit and one is a conniver. I mean, that's just what you want in life. I mean, there are days that I kind of feel that this way, but I love my children more than that, really. But I mean, you kind of get the impression that, goodness gracious, how stupid could you be to sell your birthright for one stinking meal? And how weaselly could you be to take advantage of your brother's situation like this after he's out doing something productive, but also notice what's going on? What was Esau out doing?
I don't think possibly. I don't know. He comes back exhausted.
He's out in the field. Yeah, he probably exhausted.
Isn't it perplexing that Esau, who is this macho North Dakota, would stand for this?
Yeah, you...
Why wouldn't he just take the stew?
Well, you would think that, but you know why he wouldn't take the stew? That's a great question.
Probably what he's doing.
He probably... Bob, you are on a roll tonight. You are on a roll tonight. I'm thinking it's a little more like this. You know, we only get part of the story. Do you know why I survived in life? No, because I didn't eat stew. No. Because even without knowing anything about the game of hockey, I sure knew how to get my brothers in the sin bin. You bet I did. I figured out early how to do that. Even though I was the runt, the sin bin. Where's Avis when you need her to translate? But anyway, I mean, there are ways you do this. There, when you are the youngest, fourth of four, you figure out ways to get your older siblings in trouble. And you make it stick, too. You make it stick. You've got it figured out how to do this. And particularly when you see this disparity in parenting, you figured out how to make it stick. Again, this is all speculative, Bob. But my guess is this is why. Because he knew it can only go so far. And then Mama comes in. Because can I tell you something? I don't know how it is in your world growing up. But there is one person you don't want to make angry in your life. Because as the saying goes, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy, right? I mean, isn't that the world? I mean, isn't that how it works? And see, somebody's got that figured out. And if you've got mama in your hip pocket, guess what? I don't care how big and brawny you are out there shooting animals with your bows and arrows and stabbing lions with your spears and stuff like that. I got mama in my hip pockets. I'm going to go around like this, all cocky and all. Now, I'm just speculating. I'm just only speculating. But, you know, there's probably some cause to speculate because we're looking at a picture of human nature, okay? All right. So, basically, they get despised the birthright. Okay, chapter 26 is a quick thing. There's a lot that's going on. There's the repetition of... There's, first of all, the repetition of the promise to Abraham, now promised to Isaac. God makes reiterates the covenant to Isaac. It says, Isaac, it's going to be with you that I'm going to do this. This is what's going to be happening. I'm going to take care of this with you. And that's that first part right there. But what one of the crazy things that happens also in chapter 26 is this famine that's going on in the land. And what do you do when you're in a famine? You go to where to find food, okay? Right? You go to find food. And where does he go? He goes to a place, he goes to the Philistines. Now, this is in the coastland. And so Isaac and Rebekah go there. And one of the more humorous stories that happens, for the third time, we hear the great story of she's my sister. Because he's all worried that because Rebekah is all that, and I have every reason to believe that Rebekah is all that. I really do. I have every reason to believe that she was quite the looker, she was quite attractive, and all that. So he's a little concerned about this. He's a little concerned that, you know, I show up here with this rather attractive Famali type, and all of a sudden, all the local guys in town are going to want me to wind up dead so they can have this rather attractive Famali type. Female type, that is. So that's what he's worried about. But again, does this sound familiar? Because we've done this twice before. We've done it once in Egypt with Abraham. We've done it once among the Philistines with Abimelech and Abraham and Abimelech. Now we're doing it again. So this sounds interesting. Now, one of the more curious lines has to do with chapter 26, verses 7 and 8. Keith, you want to read that for us there, chapter 6, 7, and 8? Is that where it is? Yeah. Start with chapter 26, verse 6.
Okay. So when Isaac settled in Gerar, when the men of the place asked him about his wife, he said, "She is my sister," for he feared to say, "my wife," thinking lest the men of the place should kill me because of Rebekah, because she was attractive in appearance.
Yeah.
When he had been there a long time, Abimelech, the king of the Philistines, looked out of a window and saw Isaac laughing with Rebekah, his wife.
Now, you know that I love the English Standard Version. I do. We went to great lengths to get the English Standard Version in the pews here at Atonement. I think it's a fabulous translation, except here. What's that? They were not laughing. No, no, no. You know the old Jerry Lee Lewis song? Come on over, baby. We got a whole lot of shaking going on. We got shaking in the barn. Whose barn? My barn. Yeah, that a whole lot of shaking. The King James had this beautifully put. I love the way it said. He was sporting with his wife. He was sporting with his wife. Actually, that was William Tyndale that came up with that. It was in the Geneva then, and then the Bishop's Bible, and then the King James, and also other translations. And so for years, if you're King James only, they would come to this, that Isaac was sporting with his wife. In some translations, the term caressing is used. Some use the phrase making love. Some use the phrase hugging and kissing. What's that? Fondling, yes. That's the one I was looking for. Fondling is in there. Yes, fondling is actually a popular, which basically, that's what they were doing. They were getting down. Now, in Hebrew, this is an interesting phrase. Why I point this out is because, well, A, it's funny, and B, you don't expect it in the Bible, but C, it's a play on words. Because the word for sporting sounds, it's a mitzak, which is very similar to tzadak, which is laughter, and yitzak is Isaac. So you've got yitzak mitzak right here in Hebrew. That's how it reads. So it's a play on words. It's meant to be funny. There's no question that it's meant to be funny, particularly if you're reading it in Hebrew. And so when you put laughing together in there, that really takes some of it. Sporting is probably something that we wouldn't. Fondling is probably the right word that we would want to use. But again, we're Christians and we don't fondle. I mean, well, maybe we do, but I suppose. If you're going to do that, you should do it with your wife or your husband. But nobody else. But that's what's going on here. And so we have the whole situation happening against us. Well, and then I've got this, you know, hey, I thought you said she was your wife, and so you got all this back and forth. And again, they go back and forth fighting about wells and so forth. But it's an interesting little story, but it pales in comparison to what comes at the end of the chapter. Verse 34. You got that, Keith?
34.
Of 26.
When Esau was 40 years old, he took Judith, the daughter of Beri,
mm-hmm.
the Hittite, to
the
be...
What?
Hittite.
The what? He takes a Hittite wife. Now, I got a question to ask you. When his dad was looking for a wife, he didn't do it himself. He trusted his father's servant, so basically Esau's grandfather says, what? Don't you be getting me any Hittite wives. I don't want any Canaanite wives for my son. So he gets a what?
Hittite.
A Hittite, for crying out loud, the stinking Hittite. Swedes, pity's sake. That's kind of the same thing. You need to understand, ethnically, they're not much different. I mean, you look at one, you look at the other, they're not that much different. I mean, again, I'm sorry, you know, most people cannot tell the physical difference between a Swede and a Norwegian, particularly those that live cross border. Sorry, all you Norwegians out there, but it's true. Just saying, most people on the planet can't tell the difference. Now, if they open their mouths, then you can tell the difference. You know, if they're, then you could tell. But this is kind of what I'm talking about. But you do get these rivalries, right? You do get, don't you be marrying people like that, for crying out loud. You know, all right. They might wind up like Pastor Cross's children. There are Norwegians on one side and Swedes on the other, so. Read on.
And Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite.
Another Hittite, for crying out loud, he marries two Hittite women. Holy cats! I mean, insult to injury. Okay. And what?
And they made life bitter for Isaac and Rebekah.
So needless to say, these Hittite she folk are not good things. This is definitely not a good situation. And so we have another setup. We have a couple setups here. We have setup number one with the boys being born. We have setup number two with this weaselly act that, the boys, be, well, here, I got a better note for this. Let me get my note on this, because this is a funny little note. Where did it go? Do-do-do-do. Loot-do-do-do. Do-do-do-do. Okay. The difference between these brothers, number one, in their bearing. The brothers' bearing, inside Rebecca's womb, they have... They obviously are acting different. They're fighting each other. In their boyhood, they show different personalities. In their birthright, they get angry over a mess of pottage. In the brothers' brides, you're going to love all these bees, you have Esau marrying poorly. And in the brothers' blessing, you have ultimately Jacob's trickery. So here's this story of five tensions between these two guys. Number one, from their very... their bearing inside their mother's womb, their birthright, their boyhood, and their blessing. So we have these things that are going awry in here, and so we have this situation that this is going to be get really bad in a hurry. Okay? Now, are we ready? Are we ready for the best story in perhaps the book of Genesis? Yes, ma'am. Yep.
At this point, that makes Isaac 100.
That's correct. Now,
and he's still being mugged.
He's still being mugged, yes. Now, here, this makes Isaac 100 years old. That's correct. Here's the thing. Isaac's going to live to be 180, which is 5 years older than his father lived. Now, this is important, because what comes next... is also going to tell you something about the character of Isaac. Because what comes next? It's a popular story. Not a trick question. What comes next? What's the next story? The birth, well, not the birthright, but
the blessing.
The blessing steals the blessing by what? How, what are the circumstances of that? Jacob, well, we'll get to that. But why are the? What's the whole point of the story? What's the background of it? He says, "What's he say?" He says, "I'm old and close to death." No, you're not. You're not going to die for another 80 years. That's almost half your lifetime. But he's saying, "Oh, I'm going to die." Well, it's true. Am I making this up?
Maybe his eyesight
would have been bad, but you don't die from blindness. And it's, and for his sake, it's for his sake, you're fortunate that he doesn't die from stupidity. Exactly. There is, well, that very well could be. But the guy is a hypochondriac, I'm guessing. But he said, "I'm going to die. I'm going to die." And no, you're not going to die. You're not going to die for another 80 years, for crying out loud. So I'm glad that you brought that little fact up, that he is 100 years old. Because sometimes, I would give you the bowling trophy award, Pat. No. Oh, that's okay. They're spoken like a true Upper Midwesterner. Oh, that's okay. I don't deserve that. No, you would get my bowling trophy for being observant. Okay. See, you want to be observant about these things because that's really important. And that's a big clue. As I said, this is all background story. You see, they know this. As they're reading this, as they're telling this tale, they understand who he is and what he's like and how he's old he is. But we're just sort of blithing, we're sort of skipping on through, wanting to read USA Today because it gives us little bite-sized stories, and go down to McDonald's because they give us bite-sized food. Yes, fun size. Yes. But anyway, the Bible's not fun size. In any case, so we've got the setup. All right? Any other observations up to this point? Ready for some fun? I am. Keith Reed.
When Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son?" And he answered, "Here I am." He said, "Behold, I am old."
Hang on a second here. Oh, yeah, it's on. Go ahead. We're good. Behold, I am old.
Behold, I am old, and I do not know the day of my death. Now then, take your weapons, your quiver and your bow, and go out into the field and hunt game for me, and prepare for me delicious food such as I love, and bring it to me so that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die. Now Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to his son Esau. So when Esau went to the field to hunt for game and bring it, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "I heard your father speak to your brother Esau. Bring me game and prepare for me delicious food so that I may eat it and bless you before the Lord before I die. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice as I command you. Go to the flock and bring me 2 good young goats so that I may prepare them prepare from them delicious food for your father such as he loves. And you shall bring it to your father to eat so that he may bless you before he dies."
Now, is anybody shocked right now? If you're not, you should be. Hey, son, let's cook up a plan to deceive your father. Holy stinking cow. What kind of family dynamics are going on here? There is some seriously bad mojo here. I mean, as far as family dynamics go, it doesn't get worse than this. Seriously. When you're tag teaming like this, this is a whole world of crazy that you can't possibly imagine. Read on.
But Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "Behold, my brother Esau is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I shall seem to be mocking him and bring a curse upon myself and not a blessing."
At least Jacob has the sense to think, wait a minute, there's a flaw in this plan. Read on.
His mother said to him, "Let your curse be on me, my
son." What? Wow, she has got guts. "Let your curse be on me." Read on.
"Only obey my voice and go, bring them to me." So he went and he took them and brought them to his mother. And his mother prepared delicious food such as his father loved.
Mm-hmm.
Then Rebekah took the best garments of Esau, her older son, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son.
Mm, mm, mm.
And the skins of the young goats.
Who is the active party in all this, by the way?
Rebecca.
Rebecca is the active party in all this. I told you that this was a woman to be reckoned with. I mean, this is a woman, as I said, of some serious character. Maybe I don't know about the character part. She is a serious character, however. But I want to tell you something. I would not want to mess with her. I would not want to meet Rebecca in a dark alley at middle of the night if she was mad at me. Because I want to tell you something. I know one thing for sure. I would not come out. She'd be sort of sashaying on out, and my corpse would be back in there. Because she'd figure out a way. Okay, read on.
And the skins of the young goat she put on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. And she put the delicious food and the bread which she had prepared into the hands of her son Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
So he went into his father and said, "My father?" And he said, "Here I am. Who are you, my son?"
Mm.
Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn."
Nice
I have
try.
Done as you have told me. Now sit up and eat of my game.
Oh, that was almost like Mulan saying, "Yes, let's go do manly things." And she had to see the movie. It was great.
But Isaac said to his son, "How is it that you have found it so quickly, my son?" And he answered, "Because the Lord your God granted me success."
What?
Then Isaac said to Jacob.
I mean, what's wrong with that? I mean, really, think about what, I mean, this has gone from horrific to unbelievably horrific.
It's prophetic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Boy, I'm telling you something. This is bad stuff. This is crazy. Keep going. As I said, just be thankful. Say, as you go to, "Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. And thank you, Lord, I did not grow up in the household of Isaac and Rebekah. I will never complain about my family of origin ever again." Read on.
Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Please come near that I may feel you.
Mm.
My son, to know whether you are really my son Esau or not."
Mm-hmm.
So Jacob went near to Isaac, his father, who felt him and said, "The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau."
Mm-hmm.
And he did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands.
Mm-hmm.
So he blessed him. He said, "Are you really my son Esau?" He answered, "I am." And then he said, "Bring it near to me, that I may eat of my son's game and bless you." So he brought it near to him, and he ate, and he brought him wine, and he drank. Then his father Isaac said to him, "Come near and kiss me, my son." So he came near and kissed him. And Isaac smelled the smell of his garments,
mm-hmm.
and blessed him, and said, "See, the smell of my son is as the smell of the field that the Lord has blessed."
Yikes.
"May God give you the dew of heaven,
mm-hmm.
and of the fatness of the earth,
mm-hmm.
and plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be lord over your brothers, and may your mother's son bow down to you. Curse be to everyone who curses you, and blessed be to everyone who blesses you."
Mm-hmm.
As soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, when Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of Isaac, his father, Esau, his brother, came in from his hunting.
See, this is something I don't get here. There's something I don't get here. When all these movie makers, like the guy that put together this most recent Noah movie, who's kind of an atheist, and the guy that put together this most recent Exodus, Moses movie, who's kind of an atheist, it doesn't pay to be an atheist. Because if you're going to be a movie maker, make a movie about a really good story like this one. I mean, this one, you don't need to hire a screenwriter. Because the storyline's already there. I mean, all you got to do is cast the thing. I mean, who would you cast in these places? Who would you cast as, think about this, who would you cast as Jacob? And who would you cast as Esau? And who would you cast as Isaac? And who would you cast as Rebecca? You got any ideas? I'm just curious. You guys moviegoers? Maybe you're not moviegoers. Who would you cast as these people? Anybody? Think about it.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Arnold Schwarzenegger as who? Esau, okay. All right.
I'll be back.
I'll be back. All right. Anybody else?
John 11 as the rat.
John 11 as Jacob. Okay. Yeah, actually, that would be very good.
That
would be good. I'd like that. Any thoughts on Rebecca? Elizabeth Taylor. Okay. Yeah, any one of the Kardashians, pick one, yeah. How about Isaac? Anybody pictures for Isaac there? Kirk Douglas. Okay. He's a little dead, but yeah. He's not, Kirk Douglas is not dead? Oh, he does? He must be ancient, though. He's 100. He's 180. Very good. Bowling trophy for you. Okay. Yeah. Well, actually, no. I think the older one would be better because this guy's 100. Yeah, that would work. Okay, I'll buy that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Anyway, so any other contenders? But it's fun to think about that because again, this one does not require a screenwriter. This one just requires casting and then just set them loose because you've got what's going on. Okay, read on.
All right. He says, brother came in from hunting.
Yep.
He also prepared delicious food and brought it to his father. And he said to his father, let my father arise and eat of his son's game, that you may bless me. And his father Isaac said to him, who are you? He answered, I'm your son, your firstborn Esau.
Mm-hmm. In case we want to put some emphasis on the firstborn there, okay?
Then Isaac trembled very violently and said, who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? And I ate it all before you came. And I have blessed him. Yes, and he shall be blessed. As soon as Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, bless me even also, O my father. But he said, your brother came deceitfully and has taken away your blessing. Esau said, is he not rightly named?
Is he
Jacob?
Not rightly named? He cheats! Can't you sense the anger still echoing throughout this planet? The sense of being robbed like this? Can't you sense the outrage? Can't you sense the frustration? And there he screams, is not he rightly named Jacob? He cheats. Again, you just need to cast this thing because it's ready to go. Read on.
For he has cheated me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he has taken away my blessing. Then he said, have you not reserved a blessing for me? Isaac answered and said to Esau, behold, I have made him lord over you and all his brothers. I have given him to him for servants, and with grain and wine I have sustained him. What then can I do for you, my son? And Esau said to his father, have you but one blessing, my father? Bless me even also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Then Isaac, his father, answered and said to him, behold, away from the fatness of the earth shall be your dwelling be, and away from the dew of heaven on high. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. But when you grow restless, you shall break his yoke from your neck.
You can see that it's just the antithesis of the blessing that he gave to Jacob. And now we have the curse that's given to Esau. Read on.
Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing.
I wonder why.
With which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, the days of mourning for my father are approaching. Then I will kill my
brother
thinking. Jacob. He's got a ways to wait.
Yep.
But the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent Jacob and called, she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, "Behold, your brother Esau comforts himself about you by planning to kill you. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise."
There she goes again.
"Flee to Laban, my brother, in Haran."
Flee to Uncle Whitey's house. It's going to get real fun after this. I mean, you thought this was good? You haven't seen anything until he shows up at Uncle Whitey's. Then the real fun's going to start. Keep going.
"And stay with him a while until your brother's fury turns away. Until your brother's anger turns away from you and he forgets what you have done to him."
Like that's going to happen. I mean, this is comical. This really is. Keep on.
"Then I will send and bring you from there. Why should I be bereft of both of you in one day?"
Mm-hmm.
"Then Rebekah said to Isaac, I loathe my life because of the Hittite women."
Yes, change the subject, right?
"If Jacob marries one of the Hittite women like these, one of these women of the land, what good will my life be to me?"
Woo, she is a sneaky woman.
"Then,
read on.
Then Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and directed him, you must not take a wife from the Canaanite women.
Because, you know, this is my idea that you not take a wife from the Canaanite women.
Arise."
At least that's how, that isn't that how that works? I mean, isn't that what you want the man to think, you know, that it was the man's idea in the first place? Oh, gosh. Read on.
"Arise, go to Paddan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take your wife from there, one of their daughters of Laban."
Uncle Whitey.
"Your mother's brother.
Mm.
God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may become a company of peoples.
Mm-hmm.
May he give the blessing of Abraham to you and to your offspring with you, that you may take possession of the land of your sojourns that God gave to Abraham." Thus Isaac sent Jacob away, and he went to Paddan Aram to Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Aramean, the brother of Rebekah, Jacob, and Esau's mother.
Okay.
"Now Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Paddan Aram to take a wife from there, and that he blessed him. He directed him, you must not take a wife from the Canaanite women, and that Jacob had obeyed his father and his mother and had gone to Paddan Aram. So when Esau saw that the Canaanite women did not please Isaac his father, Esau went to Ishmael and took his wife."
Ishmael would be his uncle.
"And took his wife, besides the wives he had, Mathala," something like that, "the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebaioth."
Okay, we'll stop there. So basically he marries his cousin, half-cousin. Okay. Whew. Let's unpack this a little bit, because there's a lot here. It's a familiar story enough, but we learned it in Sunday school, and we learned it. I don't know why we didn't learn like it says in the Bible in Sunday school. That's what bothers me, that we should have learned it like this. But maybe we just don't like telling our kids like this. Well, you want to grow up and be like Esau, or grow up and be like Jacob, or you really want to grow up and be like Rebekah, or you really want to grow up and be like Isaac. Maybe not. Well, let's take a couple. First of all, there are a few scenes. There are seven scenes in particular. The first scene is Isaac and Esau. Isaac asks Esau to get him some game for one last meal because he's about to die. No. Scene two, Rebekah and Jacob. Mom overhears this and sets in motion a cunning plan. Any of you ever watched Blackadder? Never mind then. Because Baldrick has a cunning plan. He has a cunning plan, a scheme to have her favorite blessed instead, because this is what mommy wants to do. Scene three, Isaac and Jacob. With some reluctance, Jacob carries out this scheme. I mean, to his credit, he is somewhat reluctant, but to his shame, he's not completely reluctant and receives the blessing. Scene four, Isaac and Esau. Esau comes back from the field. The scheme is revealed only too late. Some have suggested that it was Esau was slow-witted rather than Isaac, but nevertheless, they suggest that Isaac was the one in on the plan because he too hated Esau's wives. I don't buy this.
I think that Isaac was just as slow-witted as Esau was. Scene number five, Rebekah and Jacob. Rebekah gets wind of the plot, but you cannot out-scheme an arch schemer, okay? You just can't do that. When you're dealing with a professional schemer, you are just like a double A schemer. I mean, she is a major league schemer, and maybe he's a minor league schemer, to say the least. Then Rebekah and Isaac. Mom tells Dad that she had up to her eyeballs with the Hittite women. So here's the real problem. The problem isn't the fact that I've deceived you. The problem isn't the fact that I've turned one son against the other. The problem is these Hittite women. And let's see if we can actually do something about this. Yes, it does say that. Okay, let's keep going. But then last but not least, Isaac and Jacob. Somehow, Isaac thinks that it's his idea to send Jacob away to Paddan Aram, and off he goes into the next really wonderful story. And if you think this story is convoluted, you haven't seen anything yet. It really gets convoluted. We're not going to do it tonight. No, don't worry. We won't go there. We don't have enough time. And it's too rich a story to spend to just sort of zip through. I'll leave you waiting. It's sort of like a cliffhanger, a serialized thing, you know. But let's take a look at each of these people. Isaac's behavior. Isaac thinks he's going to die. But in fact, he's going to live just a few more decades, like eight more decades. Isaac shows favoritism to his son Esau. But that's, you know, in his defense, that's typical of the primogenitor custom of his day. I mean, that's kind of how it was going to be. He wanted to make sure his son was built up, the firstborn, and that was pretty typical, and people just accepted that, okay? He too, like his son, primarily is interested in carnal appetites. All he is interested in is a dying man's last meal. Doesn't that sound familiar? That's what his son was interested in. I'm a dying man. I will die if I don't get something. Feed me. Yes, Bob.
When they gave the birthright, wasn't that more of a ceremony and other people were observing it and taking part in the festivities?
Well, that would have probably been that way, but here's the thing. We've already cut a deal here. And you know how do you cut a covenant? You do it with a meal. When he takes a bite of that meal, he's solemnizing the covenant that he's made. He's cut a covenant with his brother. This is bad mojo. Bad stuff that he's done. Okay, that's Isaac right there. So Isaac doesn't come across all that well. Again, his... we're not done yet. He fails to corroborate a suspicious story. You know... I'm not going to mention any names, but there's a certain pastor. His name is, his name is Paul. We'll just make up the name Paul. A lot of pastors, Paul. And he's married to a woman. Let's kind of pick a name. Rhonda is a good name. Rhonda is a good name. Rhonda accuses Paul of just being criminally suspicious of everything his children do. And no matter how innocent they might appear, Paul suspects that these children are up to something, and he will stop at nothing to find out what they're doing. Now, this, of course, is just merely a hypothetical situation. This wouldn't happen in real life. Yeah. Or as I am fond of saying, 13 years in grade school, hard to fool the old man. As I said, there are a couple other things I say which are not fit for public edification, and I'm getting a power eye roll over here. But the fact of the matter is that this just is not going down. As I said, how can you possibly be so naive as to not corroborate something as fishy as this? And I guess what that comes from is that Isaac must have led a life much more like Jacob than like Esau. Because if he had led a life more like Esau, he would have been more suspicious. If he had led a life that... Well, do you know who makes the best cops? The guys that were a little on the edge. Not criminals, but on the periphery when they were younger. Because you know why? They think like crooks. And they know they know what crooks are up to. They got a little bit of suspicion in them. And I like cops like that. I love cops like that, that are just a little bit suspicious. Because they know the nature of people.
I think Esau was just a little bit too naive, and I think Isaac was a lot too naive. But if he failed to corroborate a very suspicious story, told to give way for some extreme, and told to give away something extremely value, of great value. I mean, this is not a small thing that is being given away, this blessing. The story is suspicious in that the voice is Jacob's. The story is suspicious also in that the meal was prepared so quickly. I mean, there are red flags. I mean, there are things going off all over the place. There's something rotten with this. Investigate it further. You should ask your wife and see what she thinks. You can imagine, oh, sure, that's Jacob. Yeah, absolutely. No, that's Esau. No, it's Esau. I meant to say it's Esau.
Jacob, when he gave him the blessing.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, the land's not going to do you a lot of good when you're nowhere near it.
Right.
And the blessing, well, will come, because basically the promise of the one who will come goes through Jacob, not through Esau.
This blessing has to be something different.
That's what I'm saying, it is. The birthright is the stuff. The blessing is, what's land, offspring, blessing? Of course we don't talk like that, because we're not Middle Easterners. Well, people in the ancient... It's the covenant.
The covenant of God that I'm passing down.
Exactly. You get it. That's correct. Because guess what? There can't be two messiahs. There's only one, right?
So it's kind of more than just like, you know, God bless you, have a good day.
Correct. Okay, I get that. Okay, yes, this is more than just simply, oh, bless you because you're so sweet. Bless your little heart and all that sort of, you know, like we would have our little family huddles at the beginning of every day, and as they'd go off, we'd bless all our kids and stuff like that. Oh, isn't that sweet? We did.
There was a book or a series about giving your children in nowadays a blessing.
Yeah.
And that if children miss out on that blessing, there's a lot of them that haven't received it, it's difficult.
Sure. But that's not what this is. What this is clearly the blessing that through you, the Messiah is going to be. This is a big deal. This is a very big deal. But again, there can't be two of them. This is why Isaac rightly says, I can't do this twice. And people say, well, why can't you do it twice? Come on, bless me. No, I can't do this twice, because there's only one. Because there's only going to be one Messiah. It doesn't matter whether Jacob knew it or not.
Yeah, I know.
Can I? Possibly. Rebecca knew it. That's for sure. Rebecca sure knew it. Absolutely. Why? Because she got the same blessing that Abraham got. May you possess the gate of your enemies. And I want to tell you something. I bet she could. Yeah, what you've done. Yeah, exactly. What you've done. I didn't have anything to do with this. I mean, this is, again, you see these things and then you start thinking, wait a minute, this is really a force to be reckoned with.
And she also knew that God revealed it to her, that the younger would
go. Sure, of course.
And that the older, the one is stronger than the other, but the other will.
And this justifies everything, right?
Was it just a scripture that was God said? I mean, it happened.
What it is this. No, it's not chicken or the egg. Is that God uses sinners. God uses sinners. 24 karat gold plated sinners. We'd want to sanctify these folks. And then we get all messed up in our own mind because we're not somehow living holy enough, or we're not somehow doing it right, and because we didn't do it right, we've got this mess on our hands. Well, here's two people. I want to tell you something. There's nothing right going on here. She encourages her son to rebel against his father. She encouraged him to lie to his father. She encourages to lie to a blind man. All these things, boom, 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 boom. You read what the Old Testament says about these things. She encourages them to do all this in God's name, this incredible deception in God's name. She encourages all that. Yeah. Well, that's exactly correct. God's so much better of a chess player than you'll ever be. Did you know that? You think you're all that in playing chess, huh? All this divine game. I'm a pretty good chess player. No, 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 no. God is far better at playing chess than you are. God knows every move ahead of time. He says, oh, you're going to do that? Well, then I'll do this. Oh, you're going to do that? Well, about five stages later, I'm going to do this. Yeah. But here's the thing. The problem is this. We tend to want to sanctify these people. We tend to want to make them holy because they're the patriarchs. No! Yes, they are the patriarchs. Yes, God did bless them, but it wasn't because they were such swell people. Because we want to establish or assign a causal relationship between our swellness and God blessing us. It seals the deal, yes. Yeah. And it's over a, guess what, Bob? Yeah. A meal, another covenant. It's a done deal, man. It's done sealed. How crazy is this? This is not, it's not fair. It's not fair, is it? It's not right. No, it's not fair. God's not being fair right here. Was there somebody standing there when you were born saying, by the way, it's going to be fair? No, this world is marked by sin, death, and the power of the devil. People are marked by human nature today as they were marked by human nature then. And yet God has the power to overrule that and do something greater from it. And we need to see that in our own lives. We need to see that our lives can look pretty ugly like this too. And yet God has the power to make something better out of this. We look to him. Let's keep going because, as I said, it gets better. Okay. No, it doesn't. Okay. Now, Rebecca's behavior. She is the one who's eavesdropping on her husband. Thank you very much. She's the one who comes up with a scheme. She's the one who coaxes her son into the scheme. She is willing to accept her husband's curse if the scheme is revealed. She takes her son Esau's belongings to perpetrate the scheme. She is deceptive to her husband and not telling her the real reason why she wants Jacob to leave. She is the one who tells her son that he'll be safe at Uncle Whitey's, which again is like, really? Is that what's going to happen there? Ben, have you been living away from your brother so long that you forget what your brother was like and how he treated you? Like cattle property and how you couldn't wait to get rid of him and to leave his presence? And you think your son's going to be safe there? Have you met him? Do you remember him? Okay. Now, therefore, obey my word, my son. The very name, the very same words which Rebekah uses to entice her son to sin and deceive his father are the same words which she uses to instruct him to flee. Here is the bitter irony for Rebekah. These words both mark her sin and her judgment because she will be separated from her son. Okay, that's Rebecca's behavior. Now, Jacob's behavior. He's coaxed into lying by another. His lie involves an elaborate scheme. He lies to his father. He lies to a blind man, as I said before. Leviticus 9:14 says something about that. Deuteronomy 27:18 says something about that. It says, cursed is he who misleads a blind man on the road, and let all the people say, amen. This is bad stuff. I mean, this is seriously bad mojo. He lies in God's name. Jacob departs in the presence of his family. Isaac is not at the time being deceived. He prays that Jacob will have a blessing of Abraham, which he gets in. Okay, Isaac uses the name of God, El Shaddai, the Almighty One. All right, so there we go. Now, Esau's behavior. He is outraged, and rightly so. Note the depth of emotion. He felt utterly cheated. He understandably plans to kill his brother. though thinking his father's death is near, he may be, as I said, wishful thinking on his part. In response to the hearing that Isaac wanted non-Canaanite daughter-in-laws, why didn't you say so in the first place, Dad? And so he goes and marries a non-Canaanite daughter. Anybody feel like taking a shower after all this? Now he's trying to be good. Now he's trying to earn the blessing. Okay, I want you to remember all this, because there's a lot of stuff that's going on. And we're not done yet. We're not done with this story, and we're not done with the characters. Actually, we are done with Rebecca. This is pretty much the end for Rebecca. But we're not done with Isaac. His involvement is pretty insignificant. We're certainly not done with Jacob, and we're not done with Esau.
What about Rebecca when she dies?
That's pretty much what we see. But we're really not done with somebody else. Uncle Whitey. Because that's the next... Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's waiting there. And that's where things really start to get exciting. As if this wasn't enough. Because you see this guy who looks like he has skated through, right? This guy has skated. He's done all this rotten stuff, and he comes away smelling like a rose, right? He gets the blessing, he gets the birthright, and he gets to skedaddle without his brother killing him.
I feel sorry for Esau.
Yeah.
And later on, he forgives.
Don't jump the story.
Well,
you're spoiling. We're not there yet.
I know, but I feel bad for him.
Feel bad for him?
Why? Well, because...
He was a nitwit. He gave him his birthright. He was carnal.
He lost everything.
Because he was carnal. His appetites.
He changed, though.
He changed. Well, I'm glad that he changed. What's that?
It's kind of simple, really. Not have any regard whatsoever for the promise.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he had no regard for the promise whatsoever. He disrespected the promise.
And then to take it, he initiated getting the Hittite women.
Exactly.
Tradition, you let your parents.
Precisely. Tradition, you let your... And he went out and got himself a couple of Hittite hoochies.
Well, were they taught the promise that much as children? I mean, it doesn't say anything about this.
Did you go to Lutheran Bible Institute?
Yeah, I did.
Did they teach you that there? No, they didn't teach.
No.
They said what's in the text is all we know, right?
Yeah, but I like to pretend.
You like to pretend? So, oh, bless God. You get a bowling trophy for that. Almost a Homer trophy, though.
So did God make this happen, or did the devil make you do it?
Did God make this happen, or did the devil make you do it? Okay, here's the thing. I'm going to go back to the issue of God's a far better chess player than we could possibly imagine. God has a purpose. His purpose is to bless us. His purpose is to provide the land, the offspring, and the blessing. Okay? The three things. And through Abraham, this blessing is going to happen. His purpose is going to be that the nations of the earth will be blessed through this family. Now, no matter how hard we try to mess up, yeah, I'm serious about this. I hope you realize how imperfect a person I am. I hope you realize how imperfect you're allowed. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Homer trophy for you.
Don't hold back.
But I mean, I hope you realize how imperfect you all are. I mean, we are imperfect people, capable of all kinds of craziness given a situation. And rather than see this as being, this is patently unfair, this is that. No, God's got this. I mean, yes, it's going to get a lot worse. It's going to get a lot worse. It's going to get far more messed up. And why is it going to get messed up? Because we go dinking around with things, because we think that we have a better idea, and we're going to put our hands in this. We're going to try to see if we can fix this thing a lot worse. But God says, I have this. I got this.
But then women get into it.
What's that?
The women get into it.
Whoa, man, I'm not touching that, man. I want to stay alive. I want to go home at night and live and wake up in the morning. Yes.
Okay, I'm thinking about this. We're being hard on these people because this came about. In her inquiry, he tells her how things will be.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Would that have happened? Was God's word prophetic of what she would do?
Mm-hmm.
Or was it prophetic of just how it would be without her help or not?
I think it's prophetic of, well, here, okay.
Because we're giving her a whole, I mean, we're really smashing her, and I have her name.
It's good that no one in here is named Jacob.
I tried to give her a little bit of credit of
it's a beautiful name, and you know that I like it, too.
Name. It means a noose.
It's a noose. Does that what it means? Oh, my goodness. That's even more crazy. Oh, my. Yeah. Well, Paul means, you know, small. So,
would it have come, was this God's plan? And you said that a lot of it is against the
primogenitor.
Antediluvian
primogenitors.
But a lot of the Bible is against it. So was that God's intent that we should smash that system?
You know, I think that God is, God's God and we're not. I'm thinking it's a little bit of both. It really is. That's why I say God's a better chess player than we are. That God would be a better chess player than her. It's sort of like this. If I play this game with my son. Yeah, what's that? I was hard on Abraham.
Not as hard as you are on Rebecca.
I know, because he's far more interesting.
And he's just helping along what God told him what happened.
He was a nitwit.
And she's about to see her older son get the blessing that she heard from God that her younger son
sure.
did. And she's got to help God along, just like Abraham did. Mm-hmm. And yet you just destroy her.
Yeah, yeah. But there's a much longer story about her.
I'm with her. Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you see God as being this all-knowing, forward, backward. I mean, God knows what we're going to
sure.
do, even though
mm-hmm.
he hopes we won't.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm saying God's a better chess player than we are.
And he has another path.
Well, here's, you know, first of all, let's be clear about something. When we talk about God's foreknowledge, what can happen quickly, because in the evangelical world, of which this congregation flirts with, even though Lutherans don't, there is this thing called Calvinism, which has predestination. And some talk about single predestination, like God knows the elect, and then there's double predestination, God knows the elect and the damned. I'm never signing on for that. I don't sign on for that. The other thing is that when we flirt with that, we flirt with another theology, a scarier one, and that's fate. There is a monotheistic religion that is based upon faith. Fate, not faith. Fate. Fate. F-A-T-E. Fate. That monotheistic religion that is based upon fate is called Islam. That this is just fate that has happened, this, that Allah has willed it, and that's all there is to it. And this is the path that's there. I believe, the Bible teaches, and I certainly understand from the lenses, these Walmart Lutheran lenses that I look through, that the lenses that we look through is that we cannot say yes to God. God says yes to us. But in some great mystery that's very difficult to explain, kind of like the Trinity is a mystery, hard to explain, and kind of like the Incarnation is a mystery, we can say no and skunk up the works. That yes, there is free will that's involved, but really, do you think that's a good thing? Do you really think that free will is such a good thing? If Rebecca is to be commended about anything, if she's to be commended about anything, it was what I said at the beginning, and somehow that got conveniently forgotten, that I said Rebecca should be praised for her prayer, for asking God, what's up with this? That's a good thing. And that's what we should be doing. We should be asking, where's God in all this? Where are you in all this mess? And that's a good thing. So. Yes?
How do we know that it's God playing chess and not the devil?
Now, there's a great question. How do we know that it's God playing chess or the devil dinking around with us, messing with us? That's a great question. And let me tell you something. I have woken up in the middle of the night wondering whether it's God or the devil. And that is one thing that you do. Let me give you a couple of tests. One of them is this. And this is a tough one to look for. If it's cruciform, if there's some cross in this that's calling me to die to myself and to trust God to bring a resurrection in my life, then it's probably God. That's one test. I know that's not the only test, but that's a pretty good one. What's going on? If there's a trial that's going on, is there something that God is calling me to die to self so that he might live in me more greatly? By the way, this is what ultimately happens for these guys. Want to jump the gun? Yeah, I mean, this ultimately is what happens. Is that ultimately, both of these yo-yos, Esau and Jacob, their lives become remarkably cruciform. Particularly, Jacob's life becomes remarkably cruciform. Shaped in the cross. Okay? That's one good way to tell. You know, that's a big, big thing, because the fact of the matter is our natural self finds the cross abhorrent and finds that path not the way that we want to go. And so that's a good one. Now, you know, it's painful, but see, here's the neat thing, is that he doesn't stay on the cross, nor does he stay in the tomb. Because then we can look to God for that resurrection, look to God for that hope. It's a great question, though, because sometimes you just go, how do I know? How do I know what's going on? Because these sort of things torment. You know, this is real stuff, by the way. I mean, did you know that? Did you know that maybe our lives look like this in some ways? Real stuff. I wish everybody were here to hear this stuff. It's okay. Daryl means beloved. Beloved, there you go. Yeah. You are beloved, Daryl. I do. And Olson means son of Ole. All right, let's pray us out of here. Father, thank you for tonight. Bless you so much. We're so blessed by you. We thank you for your word. And Lord, I pray, Lord, now that even though our lives are broken, and our lives are marked by sin, death, and the power of the devil, we know that in you, you have a bigger promise for us, and that's the promise of the blessing that comes through Jesus Christ. It might be a long time coming. And just as your servant who wrote the book of Hebrews says that all these same people greeted it from afar, not having received it in this place, but knowing that there's something better awaiting for them. And help us to be mindful of that in Jesus' name. Amen. Go eat pizza and serve the Lord. Yeah.